Hey, everybody. Welcome to Roger and Me, a.k.a. Roger Ebert and Me, the only Siskel and Ebert podcast hosted by film critics, me, Brett Arnold, and Mark Duzik. It's a show where we aim to cover every new theatrical release and every new streaming release every Friday, the day movies come out, if you're an amateur in the field. We're going to review every new theatrical release, every new streaming release, every Friday in the format Gene and Roger pioneered. The goal being that we are the only guide you'll ever need to all the new releases that come out. We're exhaustive, except this week, I'm going to go ahead and say, well, actually, I didn't slack off that bad. There just weren't as many movies as usual. I caught 5. It looks like Mark caught 8. So not terrible. And I will say the ones I skipped were purposeful, especially the one-star John Travolta movie that I clocked as being looking like a one-star John Travolta movie before Mark even filed the one-star John Travolta movie review. I saw a clip from it go. You see, there was a clip from it going viral on Twitter, actually, because of the way the camera moves, the drone shots that seem to be taking up a lot of that movie. So before we get into the 5 important movies to talk about of the week, Mark, what was up with John Travolta's cash out, a straight-to-video John Travolta geezer teaser, or whatever you call it?
Hi, by the way.
Hey. What's up? Right, I didn't ask you what was going on, and you told me nothing. I forgot to do that.
I know. Not much. Anyway. So, yeah, it's bad. I don't know. It feels like they're making it up as they go, including all those wild camera shots. There's one. So it's a bank robbery movie, and John Travolta has a team, and the team is being the FBI is trying to get them to stop robbing banks. The main FBI negotiator is Travolta's character's ex, who went undercover with the team and ended up falling in love with Travolta's character, and yet she's still assigned to participate in this operation. It makes no sense. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. This bank just keeps expanding and getting bigger as the script needs them to do stuff. So there's like a drone shot through an empty office with a bunch of cubicles that are completely bare, but apparently this is the biggest bank in the city, and there's no one working there. You can tell there is no one who is even like off for the day.
Well, you have to pay extras. So
yeah, well, I mean, there's like no set dressing. It's just bare desks and everything. And as the camera goes off, you can see that there's nothing on these desks. They just found
an empty office building. That also costs money. I understand.
It does, yeah.
Well, that all makes it sound really entertaining in a bad way. So I kind of want to watch it, but glad I didn't cram it in this week. We got plenty to talk about. Let's go ahead and start with the biggest release of the week, a movie that was supposed to come out in September of last year and got delayed because of the thinking was the strike was still going on at the time when they decided to delay it from their September release. And they thought, you know, they need Zendaya on the red carpet and they need the stars of this movie to sell it. And now it's out. The strike is over. The stars are out and they are selling it. The movie's here. Here's the trailer for the long-delayed Challengers from director Luca Guadagnino and first-time screenwriter Justin K, whose name I don't know how to pronounce. I will let Mark take it because I don't have it written right here. But he's a guy you may know from his strange YouTube videos. He's married to Celine Song, the writer-director of Past Lives, and this is his debut script. It's really good. Here's the trailer for Challengers.
You think that tennis is about expressing yourself, doing your thing. You don't know what tennis is.
What is it?
Tashi Duncan, she's in another league.
You were incredible today.
Come on!
To have a fashion line, foundation. She's gonna turn a whole family into millionaires.
What are you gonna do now?
Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
I want you to be my coach.
I want you to be my coach.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl? Come here.
which one of us?
Yes, that scene is sexy. Yes, the movie is sexy and erotic, even though there's definitely not a lot of sex in it, actually, at all. If any, there's none. I'll say it right now. There's actually no sex in this movie, straight up. Anyway, that scene, while being very sexy, manages to be so fun and funny, laugh out loud, hilarious, and charming, and it's all in the character details. This movie, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm sure Mark feels the same way. Just easy front runner for one of the best movies of the year. It is so unexpected. I don't know. I'm hit or miss on Luca Guadagnino. I didn't really care for Bones and All, while really liking his Suspiria, his take on Suspiria, and Call Me By Your Name, I really enjoy. But I'm hit or miss on him. So I was totally just floored by how much this movie grabbed me. And it just grabs you from the beginning and it never lets go. It's a movie that's constantly jumping back and forth in time, and things that you don't understand the stakes for at the beginning, you understand fully by the end. It's masterful on a script level. I think it's a really, really incredible debut script. And the directing takes it up. It's just like this exuberant over the top. The camera is just fucking everywhere, including like it becomes the tennis ball at one point. It has the best Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross score since their debut on Social Network, which is iconic and I listen to all the time. And this is like very reminiscent of that score, but like pure dance club mode. Like it's dance music, it's techno, it's just full club music, house music, and it just pumps the whole time. And it's just like the movie's kind of, it's about tennis and it's structured like a match kind of, and it's definitely in the four matches what it's about. I was blown away by this movie and I'm just kind of speaking wildly about it. So I need Mark to come in and be the professional and talk me through why this movie's so good.
I don't know. Everything comes together. Everything comes together in this. The script, Justin. Oh, I looked it up.
I have it right here. Karitzkis. It's Justin Karitzkis. Yeah, Justice Karitzkis. He's also you may know him as the potion seller guy on YouTube. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, give it a Google and be like, wow, it's weird that guy wrote this movie. It's very interesting. Anyway, go ahead.
So the screenplay, fantastic. It's got great dialogue. It has really strong characters. The acting is phenomenal. All three of the leads, Zendaya, Mike Feist, Josh O'Connor, all three of them are just really great playing these very different but very similar attitude. They're similar in attitude. And that's, I'll get to that eventually. And yeah, all of that stuff with the direction of taking it the first person ball perspective, are going underneath the court for that one shot where you're looking up at the players somehow. I don't know, it's just everything is firing on
the
all
sounds
here. It just,
the tennis sounds, yeah. the grunts.
And I do wonder how much I missed of the movie just kind of like swaying to the music, because it's a fantastic score. They're not selling it. I don't know why they're not selling
they
it.
They finally it allegedly came out today, maybe on streaming. Okay. Maybe you're right, they're not selling it, but I hope they are, because there was like the Boys Noise DJ remixed version of it that they put out a few weeks ago. And now, the day the movie came out, it says the score is now available. So I'm excited to get back into the real score, and I hope you can buy it. Good call.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. But what I love about it is that it is ostensibly about tennis, but it's not about tennis at all. It is... looks like a love triangle, but it's not a love triangle at all. These are three characters who are so obsessed with competing and with being the best that they can be and with beating each other in any way that they can and trying to find that way of just being better than anybody. And so that includes people that they're closest to, apparently, that they will go to these extremes and do this stuff. That's what got it. I think it taps into that feeling of what you think an athlete is like an athlete at the top of their game is like. We all know, like from The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan stuff, and how full of himself he is. But you know what? It doesn't matter, because he's Michael Jordan. That's the sense I get with these characters, is that they are so great at what they do that you kind of forgive them for the fact that they're terrible people on a certain level, because they're not. They don't think of things in the way that like regular people, regular ordinary people do. They think about things in terms of competition. They think about things in terms of being the best and how can they succeed. And so this love triangle takes on that element of just them trying to one-up each other all the time. The two guys, they see Zendaya's character and they're instantly smitten, but it's more than that, because as soon as they see her playing tennis, I love that bit. Like, they see her and their jaws drop, and then as soon as she starts playing tennis, their entire bodies drop.
That whole section of the movie is just like, I don't know how anyone can watch it without just like the stupidest grin on your face. Just like pure entertainment, movie star mode. Everyone is just so, you just totally get it. You totally get all the characters and the camaraderie between them and the competition. It just all rings so true and is so something. I don't know. I guess this movie isn't full of sex or anything like that, but it does feel like you don't see this type of thing anymore, where like people just have actual chemistry on screen. It's like chemistry is back in a big way now.
Yeah. And they're all playing up the inherent charms that they have as performers because the characters are so manipulative.
It
works so well that you kind of watch it like a bit like a soap opera, where you're just, I want to see how all of this unfolds. And that back and forth narrative is a fantastic idea, because you're understanding.
You're getting lobbed back and forth like a fucking tennis ball. You're just like, okay, I get it now. I don't understand. Okay, now I get it.
I understand. It's setting up moves that you don't realize it's going to pay off.
When he pays the final payoff is like, and like the movie ends kind of abruptly in a way, you're just like, oh, okay, that was the end. But like that moment with the hand sign is just such a, like, I can't think of a better like moment in a movie theater where the whole theater went like, like, oh my God, he really just did that. And it's such a thing that like wouldn't mean anything if you weren't paying attention earlier. But when you were paying attention earlier, you know, holy shit, this is such a meaningful moment. And everyone in the theater lost it. And it just like, it made me excited that like, this is like a real movie. It just made me feel like the power of cinema. It just like does, it uses all the elements that cinema has, like good writing and good directing and good performing. And it just comes together so well.
And really great editing and fantastic cinematography. Like I said, everybody is at the top of their game here. Everybody is doing exactly what they need to do. They understand the material and they understand the assignment.
That's the form matching the content. Like they had to bring it because the movie's about characters bringing it. And I think that's so cool that it manages to do that. This feels like such an Oscar sweeps movie to me. Like if this is as big a hit as I think it could be, I think it's going to open to like 15 this weekend and then like cruise and do decently. I think it feels like it's going to get performance noms. It could be a best picture nom. And obviously editing, score. It feels like it's going to sweep the Oscars. It seems like a crazy thing to say in April before I've seen any of the actual Oscar-y movies. But that's neither here nor there. There's something that Justin Kuritskis said in the interview. He basically wasn't into tennis, and then he started watching like Naomi Osaka, Serena stuff, and became obsessed with tennis. But he said this all started from the idea that there was like, Serena was accused of receiving coaching from the sidelines. It was a big controversy, and the ref said that the coach was trying to send her hand signals and communicate with her in the middle of a match, and she was furious about it, saying, I'd never heard of that rule before, but you can't do that. And it immediately struck me, this is, I'm reading him now, this immediately struck me as this very cinematic dilemma where you're playing this incredibly high stakes match and there's this person watching who's the only person in the whole stadium who understands exactly what you're going through and for whom the match matters as much as it matters to you. And yet you can't say anything to this person. So I had that kernel of an idea right there, which was, what if you really needed to have an important conversation with this person? What if there was something the two of you really needed to work out right then? That made two things happen at once. I started thinking about the idea for this movie, and I also started loving tennis. I was watching his research, but at the same time becoming an obsessive tennis fan to the point where it was the only thing that was holding my attention. And I'd watch movies and go, why isn't this as exciting as a tennis match? So I became a complete tennis freak. I swear I'm getting somewhere. You don't know what's going to happen. I realized that every moment of a tennis match is full of drama because it's a battle. You don't know what's going to happen and the stakes are very clear. So there's these two questions got planted in my head, which were, what could I write that would be as exciting as watching tennis? And two, what would make watching tennis even better? And for me, the answer was, if I could know precisely what was at stake for each player and for the people watching at every moment, if I had a commentary track in my head where they were telling me exactly why this point mattered, I became obsessed with that. that is such a like peek behind the curtain of a writer that blew my mind reading that. Cause I'm like, that's exactly what you'd put into the movie. It actually, he said it there and it comes, that's exactly how it comes across in the movie. You are watching a tennis match and by the end of it, it's so charged with the stakes of everything you know by the end of it, that it becomes the most exciting thing you've ever seen. And I think this guy's going to be a huge writer. It's an incredible debut.
Yeah, it's a really thoughtful, compelling screenplay that it's you are watching two people in a tennis match, and then all of those flashbacks do inform everything about the relationships that are taking place beneath the back and forth of the tennis game. It's just so well written and structured in that way that it's great. I don't want to get into too many details because it is sort of soap opera-y, and so having the specifics come out as
I love
do,
that we haven't talked about it at all. Really,
we haven't talked about the story at all. It is just because it's a tennis match in the present day, and then it's flashbacks to when they were all three of them were in the junior leagues, and then into college, and then as adults, and all how their relationships change and how they switch partners and how things evolve from there.
Who's the alpha at certain points in time, so to speak? Who's the winner, so to speak, at different times? Go ahead.
But it gets so deep into the characters that you understand exactly who Zendaya is in like every single detail, every single aspect of her character, the way that she that scene in the motel room where the three of them are together and how
the scene that they've been promoting for a year and a half. Yeah.
You know, I don't like the stop putting sex scenes in movies for one thing, because we haven't had sex scenes in movies in a long time that actually mean anything.
Put them back in. Yeah.
Put them back in general. But this one in particular, which isn't even a sex scene, but it does reveal so much about the characters. Even just having the three of them in that room and the anticipation of what's going to happen. But it says so much, like the way that the two of them get so into it because they're both so into her for whatever reasons they are. And, you know, you learn it as you go that they're both basically in it because she's a great tennis player and they know that they can take advantage of that later on when she's out of the game. But the way she leans back and that smile, she is loving every minute of this, of having that power, of having that control. Yeah. And it's great. And that's exactly who she is. She is just needs that control. And so when her tennis career is done, she keeps going with the tennis career, being a coach, because she needs that control. There's a little detail that she has a kid, but there's no scene of her and the kid together, I don't think, because her mom is taking care of the kid. And it's a little tiny detail that just kind of in the background. But yeah, she's too busy with tennis to even care about any of this stuff. And it's the same, I think, with the two guys, too. As much as it is like, you know, them battling over her, I don't think it's really about that. I think it's just about them battling each other. And she is the tennis ball in this case, just as the two of them are the tennis ball for her.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's just it gets to the heart of that heart of that competitive edge, that attitude of needing to compete in everything.
But
elevates it for me. Totally.
I never thought about the soap opera comparison until you said it. Now I'm like, oh yeah, all the turns are very like gaspy soap opera, like can't believe that happened moments. It is this very overproduced excess thing, and it all of it matches. It's just I just can't believe it came together the way it did, because clearly the writer knew what he was doing. And you know what's interesting, that this actually speaks to it. I'm really glad I read that passage from the writer, because I think if you're a viewer of the movie and you hear that, you're gonna just if you didn't get it for whatever reason, it'll come into place. But he was on set every day, which doesn't happen very often for a writer of a movie. Usually they, you know, turn it in and it's the director's job. But he was on the set every day writing along with Luca. And I think it shows that like this is very much the writer's movie as much as it is the director's movie. And it's very directed. It is like some would probably argue it's over directed, but I think that's the point. Again, we're talking about the showmanship and everything. I don't know if is it my favorite movie of the year so far? I think it is. I don't have a list pulled up or anything like that, but it is a 4-star movie and it is terrific. And I hope it's a huge hit. I really am just pulling for this movie so hard. It's like people are like, they don't make adult movies for adults anymore, blah, blah, blah. Like this is one that's a movie for adults. And, you know, it's got Zendaya, so they're obviously baiting the teens, too, to come see it. And I just hope it's a crossover hit. I hope it has legs, as they say, at the box office. It's a movie about how male friendship is really important, ultimately.
That, too.
I'll say that. The churro scene. Like, there's a lot of funny... The movie knows what it's doing.
It knows exactly what it's doing.
It
knows exactly what it's doing. Everyone making it knows exactly what they're doing and what they need to do. It is easily my favorite film of the year so far.
4 stars.
It's fantastic. It is a great piece of entertainment. It's not just a really well made film, really well performed film. It is pure entertainment on that level of human drama and of the excitement of sport when it is. Working as it is here, it's just great. It's a lot of fun, but I think it does get at that deeper idea of what it is to be a competitive person and how that overtakes your entire worldview, entire attitude, your entire just way that you interact with people. I think on that level, it's a great sports movie because it gets at that, which is something we don't always see in sports movies. A lot of times it's just,
Where does that passion and drive, like what happens like in the case of an injury, that passion and drive doesn't go away. It just morphs onto something else. I wrote down tennis sounds like 100 times because the sound design was so good too, in addition to the score. It's so good, man. It's so good. Yeah. Like, I don't care about tennis at all. Like, I think tennis is cool. I have nothing against tennis, but like, I'm surprised that I was so taken with this movie. And I understand hearing the writer talk about tennis. I'm like, it sounds like the most exciting thing on earth, because he imbued it with the backstory I needed to be invested in it. Like, if I knew the backstories between Naomi Osaka and Serena during that match, like, I understand why people get so invested in such things. Like, I feel like this movie helped me understand sports and fanaticism, in addition to just people who play sports. It's an incredible movie. I'm looking forward to watching it again, and I hope that our review sold it, because I want people to go see it anyway. That feeling, I was going to say, is there anything else that works this week? Yeah, there's some other stuff that works, but this next one definitely doesn't. Here is the trailer for Boy Kills World. It's a Red Band trailer, actually, so put the kids away if they're watching. Here's the trailer.
Lovely. This feels important. This is the whole plan.
You cannot go in guns a-blazing. Security's gonna be airtight.
Deeply confused.
So this man took down an entire squad.
I did do that.
He killed over 100 men.
Slight exaggeration.
With his bare hands.
Definitely not true.
Oh, brother. The movie is as annoying as that looks. It's as video gamey and actiony in its action as that looks. One of the funniest things I found out since watching it, Mark, did you know that when this movie showed at film festivals before it came out for a wide release as we saw it, it was not H. John Benjamin as the narrator. It was just Bill Skarsgård's voice. So the reviews were so brutal, everyone panned the narration as being superfluous and bad and stupid. So they got H. John Benjamin to do the same narration that is arguably the same, has all the same criticisms. I think it sucks as H. John Benjamin narration. And I love the guy. I can't believe this movie made me dislike a movie that's 80% H. John Benjamin narration. H. John Benjamin being the voice of Archer, the voice of Bob Belcher, the voice of Coach McGurk, if you go all the way back to home movies. Anyway, what the hell is this movie, Mark? Boy Kills World.
It's a pretty generic action movie with some decent action, but the big problem, as so often is the case, is tone. It is a revenge thriller, but it's set in this dystopian, futuristic country or city that's been taken over by a dictator. We have no idea who it is. It's just a family of authoritarians, and Bill Skarsgård's character was, his family was killed by them, and so he spends his childhood being raised to fight and shoot and run and jump and do all the cool stuff and to get revenge. And that's the setup, but it's so flippant about everything that there's no way to take any of it seriously, but it still wants us to take it seriously. It still has those elements of, I guess you call it satire of the dystopian future. Yeah. I don't even know if you can call it satire. What is the satirizing? What's the target of it?
Feel like it's just doing like a Hunger Games parody for a large portion of it? You're just like, is this straight up a Hunger Games knockoff? And it kind of is, but it's also just any derivative future knockoff. It just doesn't really have any identity other than very annoying. I found it to be very grating. And the characters, there's like, it doesn't feel like you get a sense of anybody except for the main guy, and you get way too much of him. It's just his internal monologue the entire time. And God, the justification for why it's H. John Benjamin is so funny. Like the backwards, like, he was the voice of the arcade game that I played with my dead sister, who also talks to me, by the way. She's right here. Anyway.
I forgot about like the hat on the hat element of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's hat on a hat, two narrators that aren't there. In terms of what the story is, yeah, it's so similar to like Monkey Man or any other fucking movie that we've seen recently. I don't know. The action is like, I almost want to say the action is like fun to watch, but it's mostly just too busy. It's like the camera never stops moving, and it feels like the camera's, it's too much at some point. This movie just like exhausted me. Maybe it's because it's like just CGI blood splatter bullshit, but it's just action is also like cut to the point where it's kind of incomprehensible, I think. If it doesn't deliver on the action, I don't know what I'm there for. And like by the time it has like a third act twist that just makes things more dour and like the hero puts the hero in a new light, that's just like, why would you do that? It's just, I didn't find it to be a clever misdirect or anything. It just was like a weird manipulation more so than anything. I don't know. Like it gestures at all these cool ideas, like, you know, the PR side of selling fascism, like the woman who's like, you know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder? That was me. That's the same problem with the movie we're about to talk about next, I think, where it just keeps like gesturing and talking about talking points and then like not engaging with them in any real way.
Yeah, this movie definitely does that. I'm going to give it a little bit more credit for the action. I think the action's well staged and well choreographed. The digital blood spatter is definitely distracting just because it's doing so many other things that are real and that it can't even bother to, you know, set up some squibs or anything. I don't understand that, but it the way that it is trying to tackle, I don't even know if it's trying to tackle authoritarianism or anything. It's just, so there's a scene near the opening that has an entire group of people in a marketplace being slaughtered. And what does that have to do? Why is it all of a sudden very serious about it after it's been making jokes this entire time?
Oh, man.
And then
like trauma backstory by the end.
Yeah.
Another montage of things that happened to you that are terrible. Oh, my God.
But the fact that this kid, apparently, you know, based on the flashbacks that we see, had his tongue cut out, had his ear canals cauterized, went through all this torture, and it's played off as a joke from the start by having H. John Benjamin doing his deadpan gruff narration. It's so weird. There's such a disconnect between what we're seeing and what we're hearing versus what the story is actually trying to be about. It's so disconnected. It doesn't work. But again, I think that the action works. There's a couple of decent performances, whatever they're going for. And you know, the one thing that I will say is that through all of the digital blood and all the fancy camera moves, the last fight, which I won't spoil how it goes, but the last fight actually has, you know, people doing physical combat that looks really good. And it looks like it's they're actually exerting effort and everything. I think that you realize when you're watching that there's so much hollowness to all the violence beforehand. I didn't hate it as much as you did, because I think Benjamin is funny in general. But I don't think his narration. I don't think any narrator, I don't think changing the voice changes the fact that it
changing the voice, all it made it was like they had to add a scene where they go, well, my voice sounds like this for this reason. And you're like, yeah, okay. That's an interesting reason for that. Okay. It just felt like it was trying too hard in certain respects, and then like didn't go hard enough in the things that I found interesting about it. I don't know. It's pretty lazy stuff here, and it's just like Skarsgård as a mute person was a bold choice, and I don't know if it really worked out. So I don't know. 2 stars.
I thought you hated it more. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm 2 stars. I didn't think. Yeah, that you're right. Like the action isn't the worst thing I've ever seen. Like it is, as you said, well staged. It just becomes a lot at a certain point where it does a lot of the like slow mo and then fast mo, like a Matt Vaughn style. And I'm just like sick of seeing that. It's a lot of like digital fake wonders and stuff like that. So it just doesn't do a whole lot for me after a certain point. It just became numb to it at a certain point. I'm gonna go ahead in a different order because I said I was going to. Let's jump to Humane, because I think Humane has a lot of similar issues to this movie in terms of characters just like saying things versus things happening on screen. Here is the trailer for Caitlin Cronenberg, David Cronenberg's daughter, not to be confused with David Cronenberg's son, Brandon, who's made several movies, including Infinity Pool. This is her debut. It's called Humane. Here's the trailer.
While we every day bear witness to the catastrophic ecological collapse that is plaguing our planet, we must not forget that this is, above all, a human crisis.
I am in favor of this government doing whatever it takes to win this war.
It's not a war. Wars have opposing sides.
Humanity is the opposing side. We are engaged in nothing less than a life and death struggle against our own extinction.
We are so happy you all joined us tonight for a family dinner.
What is going on?
We've decided to enlist.
What?
This movie, man, it's just so on the nose. The characters just say everything about them that you already know because they're archetypal characters. Like Jay Baruchel, who I love, is doing his best here. But like, he's the guy on TV pushing this policy of euthanasia, forced euthanasia on 20% of the population because the world is untenable because of climate change or whatever. So he's on TV being like, yeah, this is a good policy. But then behind the scenes, would you believe he doesn't believe that his family should be subject to it? And he keeps saying out loud, like, it's not for our family, it's for other families. Everyone's just constantly spouting social commentary in this movie without actually engaging it. And then when it finally becomes like a genre movie, when they set up the genre element, the horror element, the like, you know, one of you's got to die element, essentially, it becomes so tired and boring and just you're waiting for, you know, the inevitable to occur. And it's just such a derivative premise that feels like it's mixing elements of like Succession with The Purge, high concept, with like Knives Out or like Ready or Not. Even like there's just so many derivative elements to it, and like God, the social commentary and the political elements, like just like the way it gets at stuff. Like I love a movie that has trenchant political commentary. Like this isn't it. It's like characters say things like, remember the kids in cages at the border? This is far worse. I don't know, man. I thought it was quite bad. And I was really excited about it because David Cronenberg is my favorite filmmaker. And I really enjoyed Brandon Cronenberg's work. So I put a lot of unnecessary weight on Caitlin, which is not fair. But yeah, this movie is a dud. It's more of a script problem than her problem. But honestly, the direction is just flat. There's no visual style to this that jumps out at all. It's just a flat looking movie, and it's a flat movie as a script as well. What did you think about it?
I think it works in the start. I know that you don't like the on the nose element of it, but I was fine with the on the nose element as it's establishing the world and the policy and what it's trying to achieve.
When it's engaging with its premise, it's fun.
Yeah, or it's exactly. And it's really engaging. I think it's really engaging with its premise right at the start. That first act with all the family. Yes, they're saying exactly what they think, but I mean, that's where the conflict is coming in, is that they're they're distinct in what their opinions are on it and what they want to do. Like Peter Gallagher's character, he's the patriarch of the family, and he thinks that, you know, he finally finds some moral principle after standing by on the sidelines as a news reporter and just saying, these are all the terrible things that are happening in the world. And he saw it all. And now he's like, I let it kind of happen because I didn't push back when I could have. And so now I'm going to actually sacrifice myself. And all of the kids are like, you're just doing this out of ego. So all of that stuff there are strong characters here. I think there are strong characters here from the very beginning and in the beginning, in that first act, with all of them discussing and debating how this policy is affecting their family and what they should do about it. And then as soon as you need two bodies, it becomes a straightforward, nonsensical thriller. There are things that happen here that make no sense. Like a character is backstabbed. I think he might literally be backstabbed, but I don't want to say it out loud. I think he is literally backstabbed by somebody.
Yeah.
And then immediately trusts that person like two scenes later. And it makes zero sense, no matter how much sentimentality about that relationship tries to get put in, because those characters stop feeling like actual people and they become pawns in this game of trying to kill each other or trying to harm each other enough that they could be the second body that needs to be taken away.
Yeah.
And there's this layer of humor that it's really thick pretty much from the second act on, and it doesn't work. I think it works for the one character, Bob. I really like Bob when Bob shows up, because Bob deflates the entire severity of the argument by just being this pencil pushing, fill in all the blanks, fill out the form properly,
guy with the bureaucrat clipboard.
It's a really
I like
unsettling
Bob.
Performance. Yeah, it's a really it is.
It's a character.
Rico Pelatoni. Yeah, you've seen him before. Was he in Just Shoot Me? Or am I aging myself here?
Yes. No, he was.
Okay.
He was.
Yeah. But he's really good here. But he adds that humor. And then as soon as all the other characters start kind of joking a little bit, there's like these little subtle nudges. I think Baruchel is great in general, but his performance becomes so over the top.
Yeah.
Once it turns into thriller mode, I don't think his performance works. I don't think any of the performances really work.
I blame the movie more than him, because I like him so much, I guess. But like, it doesn't work. And you're right, it's not just him though. It's like everybody.
It's not just him. Yeah, the entire direction of the movie is undermined as soon as it turns into a thriller. And I there's some violence and gore. And I think that's just, you know, the Cronenberg name, that, you know, new director, and she just feels the need with the name to do that kind of stuff. It feels routine, and it doesn't work. It doesn't fit in here. I don't know. There's a scene where you actually see the euthanasia process happen. And that's far more unsettling than any of the bloody stuff that's going on, I think.
It didn't work for me. That's what sucks. It's a complete waste of a high concept for me. It barely engages with a really compelling sci-fi dystopia that it envisions. And and the satire just feels like it has no real edge to it at all. I really thought, like, when they talk about the culling and why it's good and how, like, the poor people essentially are volunteering to die so that their families are fed, versus they're all being poor together. Like, if there's such compelling ideas there, and the movie, I swear, it just refuses to engage with it because it'd rather be this like really annoying thing about just another. It feels like a really late to the eat the rich trend, right? Where all the movies are about how rich people suck and will eat each other alive if given the chance. We've seen a million of them, so it just feels like it's late to that trend. But man, that sci-fi premise as a backdrop that it barely engages with is definitely the biggest problem with the movie. The specifics are interesting, but like they don't compel, like talking about enlistment numbers and the government lying and all that stuff. Like, it just, I wish it engaged with that, and I wish I knew more about that stuff versus this family that it's hard to care about because they suck so bad and they're also derivative of other rich families we've seen in similar media. It's a 1.5-star movie for me, sadly. I really didn't like it.
Slightly more generous 2 stars for me.
All right, let's move
on.
But
it really does stop working. It really does. That's too bad.
It hits a wall, but it does start compellingly. I will agree with that. Let's talk about, we talked about a bad spider movie a few weeks ago called Sting, and I promised there would be a good spider movie coming out this month. It's here. It's on Shudder. It's called Infested. And if you're a person who, I mean, I wouldn't say I have arachnophobia, so to speak, because that feels like a extreme, but I do not like spiders. And just reading a review of this movie after, like, before this pod to remind myself of certain things, I was getting goosebumps thinking about certain scenes. I hate spiders. And if you hate spiders, this movie will fuck you up. It is a great monster movie. And the monsters are little spiders and they get bigger and they communicate. I don't know. It's crazy. All right. Here's the trailer for Infested.
Oh, mais c'est quoi tout ça, Alina?
Quoi, ça t'intéresse, les bestioles?
Oh, mais ça m'intéresse à mort!
Fais gaffe quand même, hein!
T'inquiète, je te dis, moi je suis un pro. Je te ramène à la maison. Let's go!
Comment t'as fait pour pécho ça?
Toi, tu kiffes dormir avec ça dans ta chambre?
Non, mais tu sais qu'il leur parle, bah, c'est vrai.
Je te promets, meuf.
Cache, Théo. Tu te fous de ma gueule.
Il a fait un malaise, c'est ça?
Sa gueule, c'était pas un malaise, ça.
Un truc qui tue aussi rapidement, c'est impossible, non?
Ce qu'il avait au bras, là, ça vient pas d'une seringue.
Mais si ça vient pas d'une seringue, ça vient de quoi, alors?
Man, this is a great horror movie with a great premise. Why don't you tell us what it is?
It is in a French city. I don't know if it's Paris. It's this really cool looking apartment building. Young man is obsessed with creepy crawlies and lizards and all this stuff. Finds a spider in the back room of his local shop, gets it, brings it home. Whoops, turns out it's a venomous spider. Don't want to say the wrong term. It's a venomous spider that gets loose and starts killing people. And that's basically the setup. But what works about it is that the spiders are real. They're not monsters. They're real spiders, not physically, although sometimes they are, I think, but not physically, but they behave like real spiders. They're not going out to attack people. They're just minding their own business, finding a nice little dark, dank place to build a web and start a family. And as soon as somebody gets in the way, that's when they start biting and attacking. And that's what makes it so unsettling, is that they're just spiders that could get into your house that you might
this
see
is out. This is a subtweet of Sting, a movie about an alien spider.
Yeah, it is. Well, yeah, I mean, that was kind of what I was getting at, like, in the first part of my review. I said, which is scarier, one big monster or hundreds of little ones? And the answer is hundreds of little ones, especially little ones that behave in a way that you recognize from the natural world, instead of being an extraterrestrial thing that looks like a spider and just keeps getting bigger and bigger. This is a lot more unsettling. And I don't hate spiders. I don't like them. I'm not afraid of them. But you know what? When one of them gets smashed and then all of the little babies fall off of it and start spreading, that's unnerving. Have you ever had that happen in real life?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, I but have. It's terrible. No, I'm not scared of spiders. I'm sorry. That's a thing that actually happens. The babies ride on the mother spider, and they can all flood off. Anyway, the point is, it's really crawl under your skin creepy. And there are so many really cool set pieces that are set up early on, like the hallway with the timer, with the light that's on a timer, but it only works one way.
Yeah,
and
man.
So eventually they have to cross it in a certain amount of time. But unfortunately, the hallway is covered in spiders. It's just really good on that level, of the thriller element of it.
Yeah, talk about a movie we just talked about Humane, which absolutely does not engage with its premise. This is a movie that fully engages with its premise. And that, again, another subtweet about a movie called Sting from a few weeks ago that had one fucking spider that was supposed to be cool because it grew really big, but it had no scares whatsoever. That movie did nothing for me. This movie, with regular little spiders that aren't aliens, when you kill them and they burst into a million little more spiders, it is so well done. The set pieces are so scary. I do think you're right. You don't have to be scared of spiders for it to get under your skin, but it also gets really harrowing and like people get burned alive in this movie and shit. Like it's really fucked up. There is domestic drama in this and there actually is social commentary in this, but it's all, you know, the spider stuff is rightfully foregrounded and not set in the background like some other movies that we keep referencing. But in terms of what it is like, if you ever seen the Spanish language zombie series REC, that were like people get quarantined inside a building. It was remade in America as Quarantine, where people get stuck inside a building with zombies. Essentially, it's kind of like that. But what if there were spiders? It's kind of like Attack the Block. What if there were spiders? So it's really fun. It's a really fun, upsetting. The deaths are upsetting and visceral. There's really it's the only Shudder movie that I think's actually ever made me shudder. So they should put that on the poster. Honestly, it's a pretty good quote. They can have it for free. We won't even charge for that. Very, very, very strong 3 stars. I toyed with the idea of 3.5. I really like this movie. Very strong 3. Very strong recommend. Definitely check it out on Shudder. If you don't have Shudder, Shudder's like $5. It's a part of AMC Plus. If you have that, you get them both. Definitely worth watching this movie. I think it's really great.
Yeah, it's really solid. As a thriller, I don't think the human, I was kind of leaning a stronger rating too, except for I don't think the human drama, I think it works, but it's not as compelling as it could have been to add that layer, the layer of stakes. But in terms of just a technical accomplishment of just saying, I'm going to get under your skin with the sight of spiders doing spidery things, but doing them in a slightly exaggerated way with a bunch of them, it works so well. That 3 stars for me too, but a strong 3. It's unnerving.
It's unnerving. I'm glad you agree. I definitely hyped it up for you and other people months ago when I saw it. I was like, don't watch Sting. You gotta watch Infested. So I'm glad it paid off for you, and I hope it pays off for everybody else. Here's the last movie of the week. The feeling that the time for doing something has passed. The writer director debut of star also Joanna Arno. Here is the trailer. A very Brooklyn comedy. Here's the trailer.
I like when you tell me what to do.
I know that. What else?
I don't know. Can you just tell me what you want me to do?
I'm telling you what to do right now, and you're not doing it.
Well, happy birthday.
It's not my birthday.
If you're not on Spotify, you're behind the times.
I was wondering if you could have me not even talk when I come over here.
I don't know. You really like to talk.
This is one of the drier comedies I've ever seen, and it might not work for everybody, but I don't know. I found that there's a lot to like about this, while it is also kind of frustrating. So why don't you take the lead and tell me what this movie is and how you felt about it?
It is a bit frustrating, but it is funny. It's the story of Anne, played by Arno. She also edited the movie. Just throw that in there too. And it does have a distinct rhythm where it's just her life, her ordinary life, going to work at a corporate job that she really doesn't care about.
That stuff hit me hard. I hope my employers aren't listening, but yeah, that stuff's very real.
All the video meetings. We got to talk about your job title. The corporate merger is happening.
Yeah, we accepted this part of your title, but the "and" can't be in there. That was very, very funny.
I really like that question, but it doesn't sound like you've been listening to me. There's some really funny stuff here. There's also her relationship with her parents, played by Arno's really real parents, which I found out after the fact. And like, oh, this is incredibly awkward now. But those scenes are really funny too. But it's mostly her romantic or semi-romantic relationships. Most of them are, the one is, you know, a dominant submissive relationship where she's the submissive. Right. This older guy is the dominant. And the big question is he actually dominant in this relationship, or is she the one telling him how to subjugate her so that she can feel better about her the way that she just is? I don't quite understand how it works, but that humor of watching her kind of try to take some control in that situation and in other situations, it's interesting. I like it as a dry comedy. I kind of admire it as a character study, just because it really does get at so many layers of the character, and it has this sort of contradictory nature of who she might be. I don't think it pays off, though. I don't think there's an answer. And it's okay there's not an answer. It's just that I was sitting there thinking, okay, what is this movie's view of this character as a person beyond all this stuff? I don't know. And I think it's so frustrating, because I know that's kind of the point. I know
it is the point. Exactly. It's one of those things where it's like, it's a movie to me about feeling stuck and not knowing what you want, and literally like demanding to be told what you want. And that's like what her relationships are like. That's what her life is like in other ways. It's just so deadpan, and it couldn't be drier. And it's, you know, it's a movie about the bored malaise type of stuff. And it just like takes on, like, talk about form imitating content. It's the same thing where like it has this, the movie kind of lulls you into this malaise as well. So yeah, it's a hard movie to recommend, and it's definitely a movie that will not work for a lot of people. Probably walk out after the opening scene where she's like naked and humping a guy who's fully clothed or whatever it is. But I think she said in an interview that it was like, you know, what if you saw a submissive person in one of those relationships go through life outside of that submissive part of, you know, the sex or whatever? And like, that's an interesting idea, but you're right. I guess it doesn't maybe pay off in a big way where you are, it's everything's wrapped in a bow and you go, oh, okay, I understand. I walked away feeling like I learned something about her or whatever. It's more just like the idea, a movie about being stuck, and like the title suggests, the feeling that the time for doing something has passed and you just are kind of, it's like an in-between thing and you don't know what's next and you don't really know what you're even doing now. And it's just it felt like a very millennial thing that I definitely related to in a lot of ways, despite not relating to it in others. It felt, you know, she's probably going to get a lot of Lena Dunham comparisons because she's doing like, someone could argue and say, you know, she's the voice of this generation, blah, blah, blah. And she's like willing to be naked on camera, and she's willing to perform very personal stuff. There's something to that stilted performance that it's like hard to say if it's on purpose or if it's just kind of a stilted lead performance, because characters are talking in like this heavily, very written dialogue, you know, and it is stilted. And I just didn't know if it was stilted on purpose or not. So I just wanted to call that out. I couldn't tell, but I enjoyed the performance generally. And yeah, I'm torn on 2.5 or 3 on this movie because I liked it. But yeah, I don't think it needs to have a resolution or anything. I think it's just a movie about a certain type of person, and it's a certain type of mindset that people my age have. And it reminded me a lot of, sometimes I think about Dying in a lot of ways, which is another movie that's more about the corporate side of it than any of the, there's no sex stuff in that. I like that one better, but I thought this was similar stuff, and I enjoyed it. I'm gonna give it a 3-star review. I did enjoy it.
I don't want to say I wanted to have like this big revelatory moment or something where she realizes something about herself. It's just that I'm sitting watching it, and I think I have a grasp on this character. I think I understand what she's trying to accomplish and how she can't accomplish it. At a certain point, it's like, is that really all there is to it? Is that really just, you tell us who this character is at the start, and then that's it? So I think the humor works, but maybe not well enough to justify the fact that we're just watching essentially like a sitcom, just a, you know, raunchy sort of sitcom about this person's life. I don't know. There's just something missing from it. I can't quite put my finger on it. I'm giving it 2.5. I liked it a little bit better than Sometimes I Think About Dying, because I thought that Daisy Ridley's character was just intentionally empty, an empty vessel with nothing going on there. And that was the whole point of it. I at least understand where this character is coming from. So
right on.
Just because you brought it up. I wouldn't have brought it up, but it did remind me a little bit of it because of all the corporate elements.
Yeah, the corporate stuff's doing very similar stuff for sure. Definitely not for everyone. Check out the trailer and see if it's your vibe. That I think that'll be a good sell. It's a good representation of what's in the movie, unlike some other movies. Like A24 largely gets yelled at for that. Anyway, that's the end of the podcast. We'll see you guys next week when it's May. Summer movie season begins with The Fall Guy, actually. The Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt film. And we have a new Johnny Depp that premiered last year at Cannes, I believe. That one, the Jean du Barry or whatever. There's a lot of streamers that I don't know if I'll have access to yet. So check in next week and see. Bye.
The show starts in one.
Shut up. Ugh.